Hello and welcome. Thank you for listening to a podcast from Topics Norsvin. In our podcast, we discuss various topics related to swine genetics, our view of the industry, and market developments. This podcast offers information in a lighthearted way, but covers serious topics. So grab a seat at the table of our Topics Norsvin lounge and enjoy listening.
Okay, welcome to this Topics Norsvin podcast. My name's Grant Walling, and I'm a senior service geneticist for Europe and Asia, and I'm also head of the meat group. But today I'm going to be discussing with a guest of mine about the TN Duroc. Turan, welcome.
Thank you, Grant, and thank you for inviting me here.
Not a problem. Now, you've got a new role since I last spoke to you. Do you want to just explain what you used to do and what you're doing now?
I used to work actually last 2 years in the semen export department in Norsvin, helping out with making sure we disseminate the genetics as good as we can from the nucleus herds. Previous from that, I was involved in genetics in the breeding program of Landrace and Duroc. I did my PhD in sow longevity on the Landrace, especially on exterior scoring in osteochondrosis in the Landrace then back in 2014. And I've been working in Norsvin since 2007.
And your new role, what? You've taken on quite a big thing to, you know, take forward now, yeah?
Yeah, I actually got the pleasure of, and I'm really happy about that, becoming the director of genetics and breeding in Norsvin, replacing Erling Sestedt from June 1st. So very new.
Yeah, so for anyone, basically, Turan's a month in for anyone listening to it at the moment, just to give you an idea of where you are. And you're across in the Netherlands with me this week. What brings you across to the Netherlands?
Well, it's actually my introduction week, although I have been here.
What have you been doing for the last month?
Well, I've been also taking care of learning in my department in Norway to know a bit better. It's a bit different when you're suddenly managing a department compared to just being slightly part of it and at least knowing people working there. So, but now this week I'm learning Topics Norsvin in Netherlands again to know.
Okay, so you enjoy managing the team? And more importantly, are the team enjoying being managed by you?
Let's see. I've started by insulting one of my major or best colleagues, Dan Olsen, five times, I think, in 5 minutes. So I'm not sure if it started really good.
Well, that's one approach to management. It's perhaps not one that I'm guessing there's some people that probably think that I've done a pretty good job on that route as well. But should we move on to the TN Duroc?
Sure, let's do.
So TN Duroc, perhaps for a lot of people, this is a new name and something that they've not heard of too much before. It's gradually started to appear globally, certainly over the last 6 months. Where's this come from?
Well, the TN Duroc has been developed in Norway, actually. It started with us importing some Duroc lines in the early 1990s, because our Landrace, that I think more people know of, was bred to be maybe too lean and not really good meat quality at that time. So we started to import Duroc to use it as a sire line for the Norwegian market. And due to the need of meat quality, this was a quite huge emphasis in the Duroc for a long time. But of course, I think you might know Norway is not really made for agriculture. 3% of our country is arable land. And in Norway, we say that arable land includes meadow and grass growing area. So 1% can be used for growing grain, meaning that the feed prices in Norway is very expensive still. And the Duroc should be very, very feed efficient because it should be a good choose for the finisher producers should be feed efficient to be good economics for the farmers.
Yeah, so you talked about, you know, the initial lines coming in the 90s, but obviously TN Duroc's been only something that's been around during this last sort of 12 months. So how have we gone from where we were perhaps, you know, sort of 5 years ago to actually launching a TN Duroc over the last few years?
I think one major shift from us was when we merged with Topics, so becoming Topics Norsvin, and we got the involvement from the Dutch team also on what is economic production. Then we started not only to focus on meat quality and feed conversion, but also more on growth and more on loan depth. And we also brought in some other new genes. 2-3 years ago, we also started to work even more with growth rate of the Duroc. So the main difference from the Norsvin Duroc and the TN Duroc is actually that we set a threshold on growth rate. So the TN Duroc grows better than the Norsvin Duroc.
So you've talked about the import of, like, you know, sort of more Duroc genetics coming into the country. And that on top of some changes of emphasis in the selection index has basically led to the product that we see today, yes?
Yes. Okay. That's correct.
For customers that are actually taking either semen from these boars, you know, and putting it into their system, using it as a terminal sire, what are the sort of the more positive feedbacks that we get in terms of the appearance of these progeny on the farm?
We get comments that it seems to be less hernias in the TN Duroc compared to some of the competitors. And also they grow well throughout the whole life. And in some even comment that it's less diarrhea than they sort of expected. I don't know what they expected, but yeah.
So you're talking robustness traits here. This is the ability for the animal to manage in a commercial environment. Yeah,
That's correct, and that's part of our breeding goal. So it's not surprising in that sense. We have been breeding for less hernias since early 2000 in the breeding goal, but it's also good to get the comment that it seems to be working.
Good. I certainly know that we're starting to collect some information in the US. And from the meat group point of view, I know that looking at the carcasses, there's some quite positive feedback coming in terms of how they're performing against alternative lines, certainly more than matching the competitor lines. So early stages, but certainly very positive feedback.
I'm glad to hear.
But you're not surprised because you expected
that. No, of course, I'm not surprised, but it's still... of course, I should not say that I'm surprised, but as a geneticist, you're always happy that what you have seen in your models and what you have forecasted actually comes through with the producer, because you usually work with a purebred line and sometimes you have both sort of positive and negative heterosis that doesn't always come through in the final product. So it's very good to hear that the consumers are happy, or customers.
Okay, and you talked about breeding, you know, and the breeding program being based in Norway, but Norway's not particularly well known for agriculture, as you've sort of highlighted. So what advantages do we have with doing it in Norway? But also, we've got a few disadvantages as well, yeah?
Yeah, let's start with the advantages. I think that's
the most interesting. Yeah, let's do advantages first.
I think the health status in Norway, it's something that maybe most people is not aware of, but in Norway we are free from all the major swine diseases. We are currently doing a depop repop of the whole Duroc population to get rid of APP strains, all APP strains. So we are free of PED, we are free of PRRS, we are free of APP now in 2024 in the nucleus. And we are also not having LA-MRSA, African swine fever. There is a whole list of diseases that we basically don't have in Norway, and that is beneficial for us when exporting to other markets, of course. The farm size in Norway is limiting us a bit, I would say that, because we can have a maximum of 105 sows. That means that we have more farms where we have the purebred Duroc. Yes, it leads to a bit more work for Norsvin, possibly. But on the other hand, the pigs actually also then get exposed to more environment. So in one way, it's making the breeding program more robust. If you have a break of a disease in one farm, you have some extra farms, but also the fact that the farms are a bit differently. So you are more breeding for a different type of environment than you would if you only had one farm.
Mm. And, you know, you highlight that, you know, Norway is obviously a very clean, you know, low pig density, low disease challenge, which from a breeding company point of view is great. But obviously for assessing the animal's robustness to challenging commercial pig populations, not so good. So our colleague Janelle will be turning around and saying, how are you going to look at robustness here? So how do we do it? And how do we make sure that we haven't just created a pig that's very, very susceptible to the first disease it sees on a commercial farm?
I'm really glad you asked, Grant. It's really important that we export genes and that we monitor how the finishers are doing out in the field. So that's why in Topix Norsvin we have this CCPS program where we actually use farm information from real finishing farms in Europe to monitor how the finishers are doing in those farms and then get that information back to the genetic nucleus. And then you can, by using that information, actually breed for robustness in other environment than you have in your own country.
And are we confident that we have these animals across multiple markets and multiple disease challenges so that we get good quality data back?
It's a good question, but you can never be sure, Grant. But yes, I feel confident because we have pigs in Europe. We have pigs in Russia from Duroc. We have Duroc in US and we have Duroc in Asia. And I think they fit well in all type of environment. And in Norway, we have free farrowing and loose housing in all stages, also in the Duroc nucleus population. So that's also something for the future. I think it will fit in those production system, but it also seems to work very well in both sort of bad conditions and good condition farms. So it, yes, I'm quite confident in this.
So we've ticked off the you know, how we cope with disease. Now you've just mentioned there free farrowing. Obviously there'll be a lot of people listening to this that haven't come across free farrowing and are not expecting to come across it, for example, the next decade. What's the advantages here? And are we sure that there's no disadvantages for the people using conventional farrowing systems?
Well, I think it's easier to compare to the TN70 that we know is successful both in free farrowing and non-free farrowing conditions. And I think it's an advantage for all the lines in Norsvin and Topix Norsvin to be bred for those conditions and also that we breed for pigs that can have long tails. It might be a long while until we actually do have long tails in all of Europe, but it might come. And then it's good to have pigs that you think can work in those kind of systems. And so far, what we have seen is that what works in free farrowing also works in fixed systems.
And, you know, in this situation here, obviously, people aren't going to have Duroc sows on their farm. Essentially, it's the finishers. So we're looking at piglet behavior traits here, yes?
Yes, piglet behavior, but also finisher behavior. I think what is something that is difficult when it comes to breeding is that the purebred animal behaves very different from the crossbred animals, the three rotational cross that you have in your finishers. But and the finishers is what they will see. The piglets of the Duroc, I think, is known for being quite vital at birth. They quite active with the udder of the sow, so they are suckling well and growing very well also in the first phase.
And you talked about the sort of the structure of Norwegian farms earlier, a lot of very small farms, which works in our advantage, as you were saying, regarding the health. If there's a problem on one farm, then there's plenty elsewhere. It's not quite so helpful when it comes to trying to do comparisons because you get a lot of animals across multiple sites. Now, do you want to just explain a little bit about Delta and how that helps with us in terms of comparing animals on, you know, across different sites?
Sure. So in Norway, we have had the centralized boar station tests, I don't know, maybe from the 80s. And we built a new Delta station in 2008. And that's where we bring boars from 30 nucleus farms together. It's both Landrace and Duroc, so about 24 Landrace farms and 6 Duroc farms. And they are all brought into the same barn. And I think that's something you can do only when you have high health status in the whole country, as we do. And in that central test station, we take them in when they're around 40 kilos, start of the test, and then run them through feed registrations and, of course, health registrations, and test with CT scanning at 120 kilos. So then we get daily feed intake and weight on them, and we also get the CT scan of the animal, and we also get the exterior evaluation of each animal.
So we'll come to CT scan in a minute. So how many farms are actually contributing to the Delta station, for example, for Duroc?
It's 6 farms.
Six different sources going into there, and then basically those pigs are being mixed together.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's we do everything you advise farmers not to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, mixing multiple sources onto the same site is always the first. You know, the vets usually are sat there having a heart attack when you think about it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But it works due to the health status, I think.
Right. And then you've got all this test performance coming through. You're monitoring, obviously, weights. You're monitoring the feed intakes. And then the CT scanner at the end. So what value is that providing for you?
The main reason for starting with CT scanning was to measure lean meat percentage on the live animal. This was before genomic selection. And to have the phenotype on the animal itself was very, very valuable. When we started, we have had the trait lean meat percentage, slaughter yield, and osteochondrosis score on the live animal itself, or on the selection candidate. But gradually now we also evolved to being able to do a virtual dissection of the pig. So that means that you can measure on the animal itself how much ham, belly, shoulder there is on the live boar that you will select into your AI stud, and it increases accuracy of your selection.
And how many boars can you get through the CT scanner a day?
We have holding pens for 24 animals per day.
24 animals a day going through the CT scanner, yeah?
Yeah, because they need to be sedated. And when they wake up, they are a bit dizzy and drunk. And then you cannot put them back to their...
Is this the staff or the boars?
This was the boars, okay. Grant. Yeah. And then you cannot put them back to their pen immediately, because then they will be bellied by the other pigs. So they usually have to stay some hours.
Okay.
So 24 boars per day is the capacity.
And any limits in terms of what size of animal you can get through the scanner?
Well, it's a human scanner, so it's also used, could have been used for humans as well. So the only exception is that we ordered a CT scanner for heavy humans. It can have, the limit is the sort of the table, scanning table, and that can handle animals up to 150 kilos.
150, that's a heavy human, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to eat a fair bit to get there.
Pardon?
You've got to eat a fair bit to get to that 150.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I will not try.
You know, we were talking about what weight it goes up to before, and I know you said about a heavy human, up to 150 kilos. Norway, in comparison to some of the markets that my team are working in, you slaughter quite light. So how confident can we be that the data you're collecting is actually relevant on a global scale?
Well, we are currently scanning the animals at 120 kilos and we'll go up to 130 kilos in the new Delta station. And we see quite close correlations if you look to the correlation between weight on yeah, different ages, you see that there is a very high correlation from a day-to-day growth and also a day-to-day body composition. But of course, you cannot stretch it too far. So in our Delta station, we scan the boars on equal weight, not equal age. So it's a good question, and at least we should scan animals as heavy as we can, I think.
But you're now up to 120, 130 kilos, which, you know, and I suppose just to make it clear to people listening, you know, that's a live weight of the animal going through. It's not a carcass weight. So
No, it's a live weight.
Yeah.
And back in 2010, 11, I believe, we scanned the animals at 110 kilos. So actually we have increased it because, as you're saying, that we know that the carcass weight outside Norway and also probably in the future will continue to increase.
Yeah, and certainly we see the carcass weights are increasing globally. In fact, there's a very good podcast about that if anyone wants to look it up about where we're moving with carcass weights. But it's good to see that the testing protocols are actually following that. But,
yeah, it really should. Because we know that as the pig grows heavier and older, it will start to deposit more and more fat. And of course, we want pigs that grow with lean growth to as high weights as we wish.
And I suppose other things that our listeners will be thinking about is, you know, if I'm sat at the moment in Spain or in the in US or Canada, how can I be sure that the genetic improvement that you guys are delivering in Norway, how does it, you know, how can I be sure it's getting to our country?
Well, that's a role that I had previously, actually being involved in the export of semen and live animals from Norway. And it's every second week, I think, we export semen to Canada, to the nucleus herds there. And seven times a year, we export boars to, for example, Spain. And then it's our colleagues in Spain is partly deciding the selection, and or together with them, we have decided what to select. And so it's a prioritization and getting good boars out of the country. So the very best boars are kept in Norway, of course, for the nucleus breeding. And then the second best boars, they are spread all over the world. So it's about keeping the genetic lag as low as possible.
But the boars that are kept in Norway for nucleus breeding, you've just said there that some of that semen's actually moving across to the Americas, yeah?
Yes.
On a bi-weekly basis, basically.
Yeah, both to US and Canada, we ship every week now, I think.
Okay, so that you can be pretty confident that the best boars being used in Norway are also being used in those other markets.
I can assure you it is, yes. And it's some very, very good boars being brought up in both US and Canada.
And then if we sort of, we start rolling forward and we say, okay, so how's this product going to develop? What are the main things that you think we can tackle with the TN Duroc going forward? Where do you see the product line, you know, and, you know, how's it going to stand out in the field in, let's say, you know, in 5 years' time?
I think continue to be a Duroc that performs well in a number of traits. It will stand out being a good grower, will be feed efficient, and still it will deliver the meat quality that is demanded by the market. And also it will be robust for production, and it should have good feet and legs.
So you're basically more emphasis on that broader breeding goal and those broad definitions of what's important on farm, yeah?
Yeah. I think in the breeding goal of development of both Norsvin and Topix Norsvin, we have all the way been emphasizing on a breeding goal that fits for the whole value chain. So because it should be what we say in Norway, it should be a product that fits for the whole value chain in Norway, not only the piglet producer or not only the finisher farm or the slaughterhouse. It should fit in all the whole value chain.
Okay. And basically early indications are that it's fitting pretty well.
I hope so. Yes, I think so.
And it's your job going forward, remember now. I know you're only a month in, but basically it's sitting at your door.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's things that I'm looking really forward to is the breeding goal discussions. Where are we headed in the future? How much emphasis should we have on the climate, gas, welfare related traits compared to the pure economic traits? Because we need a product that fits also the farmer right now, and we need a product that will fit the farmers in the future.
And so go on, a last question, because you've got to take us down this road. What new traits do you think we may end up putting in here for fit the farming of the future?
I would say, first of all, we will work more with carcass traits, like belly yield is quite important to us. It's in the breeding goal now, but I think we will evolve in that. I think also that we will use the CT more to find new phenotypes, not necessarily because we think we need to improve, but just to avoid having negative side impacts. So even broader breeding goal is what I think for more robustness traits, because mortality in finishers is very expensive and also bad ethics. So I think more, even more traits related to behavior and robustness is at least what I would count on.
So, Turan, that's really encouraging to hear. I look forward to seeing how this develops. And thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information on this topic, please contact your local Topics Northwind representative. Subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. Until next time.